The Kakadu plum is an Australian native superfood containing 100 times more vitamin C than oranges. So why have you never heard of it? PR. No one's drinking a Kakadu smoothie? I'm J.B. Smoove, and that was a full episode of my new podcast, Straightforward, inspired by guaranteed straightforward pricing from AT&T Fiber. Get what you want without the complicated. AT&T Fiber, live like a gigillionaire. Available wherever you get your podcast. Limited availability in select areas. Visit AT&T.com/hypergig for details.
When you buy Kroger brand products, you feel like you're winning. That's because they offer proven quality at lower than low prices. In fact, we guarantee that you and your family will love how Kroger brand products taste, or you get your money back. So next time you're shopping for the family, look for delicious Kroger brand products, because they'll make you all feel like you're winning. Shop now, in-store, or online. Kroger, fresh for everyone.
Episode 315, How to Build and Break Habits That Cause You to Overspend.
Welcome to the Frugal Friends Podcast, where you'll learn to save money, embrace simplicity, and live a richer life. Here are your hosts, Jen and Jill.
Jen's back.
Welcome to the Frugal Friends Podcast. My name is Jen.
My name is Jill. Oh, doesn't that feel so good?
Allow me to reintroduce myself. My name is Jen.
Yeah, there she is.
And her name is Jen. I'm so excited to be back.
Yeah. What are you back from, Jen? Gosh. Tell the people who don't know.
For those of you who are new to the show, I had a baby. Woo. And I took some time off. For you, it was only 3 weeks. For me, it was 2 months. So it was, gosh, over 2 months, 2.5 months. So this is my first episode back, and I hope I remember how to record it.
We'll so see. Far, so good. This feels good to me. Back yes. in the fold. We had some great co-hosts in the previous 6 episodes to this one, but Jen, it's good to see your face. Good to have
it's
you back.
Me.
It's fun to Hi. Hear your crying baby
I'm
in the background on this
me.
Podcast.
Oh, I'm so sorry. Oh,
no, that's good. It's real life.
Okay. It's only going to be for the summer. So, which brings us to the sponsor for this episode, the Summa Slowdown. So, Summa has graced us with its presence, and with it comes a slew of free activities put on by your city, church, school, parents, everyone. Activities. Summer is a time to stress less. And while that's easier said than done, we want to put our action where our mouth is. So for June and July, while my baby is still home and not in daycare, we are going to be releasing one episode per week. Will it cut our income in half for 2 months? Yes. Will it give us more time to enjoy the season and stress less with a small baby at home? Absolutely. But this is why we save and spend intentionally, so we can afford to rest. So we will be back to 2 episodes per week in August, but we encourage you to rest with us this summer and embrace the Summa Slowdown.
This is so beautiful. Well said, Jen. And there is permission for this. Speaking of building and breaking habits that cause us to overspend, there's nothing like cutting your income to force you to spend less.
And that's why we have some habits that we need to learn how to break, so that we can do things like this and have freedom like this more easily. So,
you'll still be getting your weekly episodes every Friday.
Yes,
it's still going to be Frugal Friends
Friday.
You just won't be getting your Tuesday episode until August again.
Yeah. So take your Tuesdays and do something productive. Don't do anything productive. Do something unproductive.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So it's Tea Time Tuesday. You can just take a tea time. That's it. All right. But if you are into habits, like we are habit geeks. We love talking about the psychology behind habits. So if that is you too, or maybe you don't know it's you yet, we have a couple of other episodes that we talk about habits. So the first episode, 274, how to align your spending with your values. That's a lot of how to obviously execute the habits that you're building. Episode 181 is our primary other habit episode. So this one is actually more of a 101. Episode 181, while we did it a while ago, is actually like step two. So that one, episode 181, how to identify and improve spending habits, really good one to listen to after this. And if you want even more, you've heard us talk about it. We've got a free 3-day spending makeover where we also touch on spending habits. And that's free. It's got three free lessons in it and a workbook. So you can go to frugalfriendspodcast.com/makeover and you can learn how to do full spending inventory, identify your values, and then start to build those skills necessary to improve your spending habits.
Yay. Well, let's get into this. We've got some really great articles for you. The first one comes from CNBC, and it's titled Three Habits That Actually Cause You to Spend More Money, According to a Behavioral Researcher. So they are citing a lot of the findings of Marielle Beasley, who's the co-founder of Common Sense Labs, where she's talking about these habits, and then it's kind of an overview of that behavioral research that was done. And just begins by talking about how often we can have the best of intentions, but still make mistakes along the way because we're human. And I know for myself, that is still true, even though I have a personal finance podcast for 5 years alongside Jen, who I've learned so much from. I still am not hitting every goal and crushing my savings and spendings and investing and all of that. And we can all have the best of intentions. I love the example that they give at the beginning of we can think and plan when we're going out to dinner, we're just going to have one glass of wine. But then, you know, we're with really good friends and you end up having three, or I am going to challenge myself to save $50 a month. But then by the end of the month, only find $25 in savings. So I think that this in a really succinct way gives some of the reasonings to why that happens. And the more we can understand that reality, the more we can respond well and see shifts. So while I'm not perfect, I know, Jen, you would say you're not perfect, there can be improvement along the way, however, within this. Any overarching thoughts from you, Jen, on this one?
Yeah, we're going to say the three habits, but I think traditionally when we think of quote unquote bad spending habits, we think of that ordering the two extra drinks at dinner. We think of the Starbucks drive-through on the way to work, ordering takeout for lunch. So those are not the real habits that we're focusing on today. And so I just thought this was a very cool, like there are deeper habits that cause those more superficial ones. And so I love that this article goes into those. And then the next article will go into more specifically how to break them.
Yeah. So the first habit number one, is that we can often tend to rely on our willpower to restrict our spending. We can think that that's enough. If I just grit my teeth and white knuckle this thing, that's going to be what helps me restrict my spending. And the researcher explains that motivation, like anything else, and you've heard us describe this, it ebbs and flows. Motivation can't be the thing that we're waiting on to just happen, to just befall us, and then the rest of life follows suit. So if you're just relying on sheer willpower to prevent you from making purchases, it's going to wear down over time and won't always be effective. They also reference how budgeting can be one of those things. Like, well, we try and restrict our spending through budgeting and then thinking it's our willpower that's going to help us keep in that place. Now, I love budgets, but I do think that this is highlighting an important thing about the way that we approach budgets. So creating a budget can help us know where our money goes, how to allocate it. But a lot of times, if we're trying to use that as the motivator for our willpower in this effort to curb spending, it can lead to this cycle of overcompensation, where maybe it works for a little bit of time. Oh yeah, I just saved all that much, but now we feel deprived and then we overspend and the gains are hardly anything because we've then overcompensated for them. So this just sheer relying on willpower doesn't work.
Yeah, it's like, so when we talk about decision fatigue, it's the, for, you know, for those of you who don't know, decision fatigue is by the end of the day, like in the morning, your decisions are great because your mind is fresh. But by the end of the day, you are, you know, eating ice cream, impulse shopping on Amazon, because your willpower literally has been depleted from your body. Your brain only has so much capacity to make decisions. And so instead of working against that, which is the real mistake, we need to be working with our minds. So we need to be looking for those ways to kind of internally motivate ourselves to keep going. So part of that is, you know, quote unquote, find your why, but there are other smaller things that we need to be doing to really move on our own volition and not rely on willpower.
Yeah.
Habit number two is focusing more on immediate satisfaction versus long-term benefit. So like what I was just saying, when your willpower is depleted, then it makes it even harder to focus on the long-term benefit versus the immediate satisfaction. And I would say it's not a bad thing to focus on immediate satisfaction. Our brains are kind of wired to do that, but not doing it every single decision. So most of our decisions have to be for long-term benefit. So I'd say it's probably like an 80-20. If 80% of your decisions are sound and provide long-term benefit, then 20%, you could just like go off and impulse spend all of it at Target, you know? So we're not looking for perfection. We're just looking to do 80% right so that we can have the freedom to not think about it, not be so guilty with that other 20% or whatever ratio feels good to you.
And that's a little bit just default mode. I feel as though immediate satisfaction is innate and it does take work to be able to identify long-term benefit and create ways for us to see some degree of short-term benefit while we're working towards long-term benefit. But that's so often what habits are. There are these things that have worked to some degree or have created shortcuts and efficiencies, but many of them aren't actually working in our favor. And so a lot of this is just becoming aware of those habits that aren't benefiting us and how can we shift that. Again, we'll get to that in the second article. But yeah, it's natural that we would want to focus on immediate satisfaction. But that in the long run is going to lead to that overspending. So that's another reason that we can find ourselves like in that rut. Why? I had the best of intentions. Why did it end up this way? Mm-hmm. And these are some of the top three reasons. And the final one, habit number three, is just simply following the crowd, keeping up with the Joneses or whoever it is that you follow on Instagram. This can highly and heavily influence how much money we spend and what we spend it on. We often will take cues from those around us on what we should be doing, how to belong. Again, this is one of those just innately programmed things of humanity. We want belonging. We want immediate satisfaction. We want efficiency. We want to believe that we've got the grit and willpower to just say no to whatever, whatever. But the reality is there's a lot more forces at play here. And especially if we are not actively aware or intentional about that, we can find ourselves buying the things, doing the things, having the experiences that maybe we don't even love that much. It's just what's happening with those around us, and it's influencing the decisions that we're making. They reference research. Now, granted, I did not click on this to see if it met Jen's standards of research, but apparently the Federal Reserve Bank of America, the Federal Reserve Bank of Philadelphia. I'm from Philadelphia,
so to me that's highest America.
Like all of
you
America.
Would.
Yes.
Yeah.
The best of America comes from Philadelphia.
I'm going to check this now.
Okay. The Federal Reserve Bank of Philadelphia found that if your neighbor wins the lottery, you're more likely to file for bankruptcy. This sounds like a ludicrous fact. I mean, first of all, how many people have they been able to actually study who won the lottery and then look at the behaviors of those lottery winners' neighbors? I can't imagine it was more than five. Feel free to report back, Jen. But still, the point that they're trying to make here is we are heavily influenced by those around us, whether that is our neighbors, the place, just our immediate community, our friends, our coworkers, the people that we're choosing to follow on Instagram, social media. We will be influenced by their spending habits. And if we are not intentional about choosing something differently, that's just how it's going to shake out in our spending behaviors.
Yeah. I want to note that to quote the study, to examine this question, we rely on matched data on the universe of lottery winners and the universe of bankruptcy filers in a single Canadian province.
What? So, and it's the Federal Bank of Philadelphia doing this research?
Thank you for your rigorous
Canada
citing standard CNBC.
No, they just wanted it because it sounded so crazy.
Right. But so to bring it back around, these three habits are really important to look at. That's why it's important that we look in habits, because we only have a finite amount of willpower at the end of the day. So we want to put our actions on autopilot. That's what habits are. We focus more on immediate satisfaction. It's the way our brains are wired. So we want to have good habits, and we want to just be intentional about our habits so that we're not falling into unintentional, like, limiting ones. I don't want to say bad versus good habits, because one person's bad habit could be another person's good habit, but limiting and growth habits. And yeah, we follow the crowd. So we want to have 80% of our habits being, our actions being good habits. So in those times where you do follow the, you know, what the Federal Reserve Bank of Philadelphia is saying you might do, you're mostly taken care of. So I when you were saying this one, the habit number three, I was remembering, I follow this guy at, I think it's Shabazz, or Shabazz Says, or just Shabazz.
Yes.
Yes. Where, like, he goes.
The rich people and the po-folk.
All the rich people. I don't even know if they're rich, but they just carefully and luxuriously curate all of this designer stuff. And, like, apparently there's a part of TikTok where, like, fancy ice, like, filling your freezer with, like, fancy ice is a thing. Mm-hmm. And it's just all so pointless. But if that's all you're seeing, and he'll make just really funny commentary, like, poking fun at it. Not the person, but just, like, how ridiculous practices mm-hmm. are. Like, if that's all you're seeing, you can think that's normal and you can follow the crowd with your fancy ice, but you really have to ask yourself, why? Mm-hmm. You know, is this what I value, or is this just something, like, I'm seeing and my brain is just automatically going to, I should do this.
Yes.
That's why habits are important.
I do love following
checking
him.
Your sources.
Yes. Thanks for checking that source, Jen, because that was a wild fact that turns out to not be maybe all that factual. And this is why we scour the internet on your behalf to save you from this insane research.
Absolutely. But sometimes the research doesn't take that long.
For many of us, there comes a time when we need to navigate some complex money situations, and it's tough to know who to trust when receiving crucial financial advice. That's where Fearless Finance comes in.
Fearless Finance is making financial advice more affordable and accessible. They're a fee-only financial planning firm that provides on-demand, comprehensive financial planning by the hour, without the high fees and long-term commitments that come with traditional financial advisors. You can quit whenever you want with no strings attached.
Their planners meet you where you are at on your financial journey. So whether you're looking to buy a house, optimize your savings, or just want to get expert eyes on your finances to ensure you're on the right track, they can answer your questions and help you achieve your goals.
Visit fearlessfinance.com today to get started. You can chat with a planner for free to make sure it's a good fit. And you'll get $50 off your first planning meeting when you use the code FRUGAL.
AI might be the most important new computer technology ever. It's storming every industry, and literally billions of dollars are being invested. So buckle up. The problem is that AI needs a lot of speed and processing power. So how do you compete without costs spiraling out of control? It's time to upgrade to the next generation of the cloud. Oracle Cloud Infrastructure, or OCI. OCI is a single platform for your infrastructure, database, application development, and AI needs. OCI has 4 to 8 times the bandwidth of other clouds, offers one consistent price instead of variable regional pricing, and of course, nobody does data better than Oracle. So now you can train your AI models at twice the speed and less than half the cost of other clouds. If you want to do more and spend less like Uber, 8x8, and Databricks Mosaic, take a free test drive of OCI at oracle.com/strategic. That's oracle.com/strategic. Oracle.com/strategic.
So I love this next article, and I can't believe we haven't covered it before. I actually looked at the show notes for 181. I was like, we should have. I've read this article a million times, not a million, but a lot. I was like, we have to have used it in 181. No, we didn't. So the next article is James Clear's How to Break a Bad Habit and Replace It with a Good One. It is one of my favorite articles on the internet. But in 181, we used a James Clear article on how to build good habits. So this one, we're focused on breaking habits and then to build habits, follow up with 181. I know that's in the title, but the point of it is to get you to listen to 181 after this one. That's the bait and switch.
James Clear is just a good resource too in learning more about habits. So it's why we reference this work so often. And there's not necessarily 10 tips, 5 steps, blah blah blah, just kind of taking us through what causes bad habits, what can we do about it, what are some techniques that work. So we're just going to work our way through that. Yeah, feel free to start, Jen, with what causes bad habits?
All right. So what causes bad habits? Most of your bad habits, according to Clear, are caused by two things, stress and boredom. And I would say boredom in the sense that you're just not being intentional. It is always easier. Our mind always takes the road with fewer obstacles. And so I would say maybe you're not bored, but your mind might be. So I would maybe even add a third. It's just like situational, like seasonal, kind of where you're at, not being intentional about where you want to go. A lot of bad habits, especially spending habits, can be caused from that. But also stress and definitely also boredom. I know sometimes, especially with a newborn, if I just want to get out of the house, like I'm going to Target because it's too hot outside by 3 p.m.
It's like water. Our brains will take the path of least resistance. And I will caveat this by saying all of the other principles that we've talked about throughout this podcast still remain. We still have to recognize the season that we're in, our current capacities. What does kindness to ourselves and well-being look like right now? And we can't tackle everything all at once. And so really measuring whether you're in a season of maybe just maintenance or in a season of growth or whatever it is. I think, you know, Jen, I hear you say, oh man, there's these things that I'm doing. Yeah, but you have a brand new baby and a 4-year-old, and you're getting back into the pace of work life, that going to Target might not be something that you want to be doing to cope in a year from now, but is it okay for now? Like there is still this spectrum of what is and isn't beneficial for us. And going to Target is still far better than going to the bar.
So they it is. It's far better than taking my newborn to the
bar. To the bar, right?
For sure.
And that would be a coping mechanism, too. So I think also learning where you are along the way and being kind to yourself in this and recognizing that, okay, you bite your nails, you go on shopping sprees, you overspend, or you might not be able to shift all of that all at once. Pick your thing, decide what is okay, maybe for a season, check back in with yourself. It's all a part of this equation.
Yeah, but he says at the end of this, recognizing the causes of your bad habits is crucial to overcoming them. And so I think that just reiterates, you have to recognize the season that you're in and know, is this a season where I can change my bad habits or my limiting habits? Or is this a season where I can, you know, focus on this limiting habit, but not this one for this reason? So that is definitely number one.
Awesome. Then the article goes on to explain how we don't eliminate bad habits, we replace them.
So snaps.
We're just going to pause there. Okay, picking back up. So there is no reality where we can just cut out of our lives something that is ill-informed, misplaced, misdirected, non-beneficial, without replacing it with something else, without identifying, well, what will I do instead? If you're accustomed to going to Target every single Saturday as a way to just get out of the house and you end up spending money, you can't just stop that cold turkey. And that goes back to that first article of relying on willpower. Well, it just doesn't work. There would need to be something else coming in to replace that. What will you do instead needs to be a really crucial integral part of this equation. Just that recognition that I'm not just going to get rid of this habit. I'm going to have to identify how to redirect it.
Mm-hmm. Yes, absolutely. It's like when you dig something out of a dirt road and you're driving over it, you want to replace that thing that was in the road. You got to fill it back up with dirt in order to drive over the road, considering if it's a big thing that you dug out of the road. So
how big's the shovel?
How big is the thing? I want to say like it was a dead animal or something, but
you
got to fill it back up in order to drive over it. You don't just take it out and then, you know, drive over it. You'll get stuck. So that's kind of the idea, is that you don't take something away without replacing it, because your brain just works easier. It works more easily when you replace. So then we go into how do we replace? How do we break the bad habit? So I like James Clear's habit loop. It's a smidge different than the traditional habit loop of three phases. So he basically takes that habit loop, and for every reason that you would perform a habit, he just like takes the opposite. You just do the opposite. So like the first part is, well, first you have to choose the substitute for your bad habit. But the first part of the habit loop is the cue. So you just make the cue like obvious, or you make the cue. That's how you build one. You make the cue kind of as disguise it as much as possible or ignore it as much as possible. So like if your habit is picking up Starbucks on the way to work in the drive-thru, you go a different way to work, or you get in the lane farthest from the Starbucks. So you make it as hard to do the habit as possible. Cut out as many triggers as possible. And so that's the first step to breaking your bad habit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So which is twofold. It's that first choosing what the substitute is going to be, then cutting out as many triggers, the thing that's going to come just before. Like if you always eat cookies when you're home and you're watching TV, then it might be something that don't watch TV at night. Like there might be cutting out these different triggers that always lead to the next thing of of the habit. Of course, mm-hmm. as it relates to finances and spending, there's different things to talk about there. Of if I always go to Starbucks on my way to work, then maybe I need a different path. I need to take a different way to work so that I'm not passing that Starbucks. And eventually that will turn the external motivators into internal motivators. But initially, our brains do need these things to just be removed. We can help ourselves out by eliminating some of those unnecessary temptations. The next thing that they recommend is to join forces with somebody. We love this because we think we go further together. And having community is a massive part of experiencing well-being and quote-unquote success in feeling empowered in your personal finances and achieving goals. If we bring someone else along, whether you are aimed at the same exact goal or similar goals, or you both are just trying to achieve something, somebody else to be able to talk about that with, share what your goal is, share what works for you, what's not working, be able to have someone to celebrate together with when those little victories and big victories happen. Having someone else is a really powerful motivator. Not that motivation is the thing to be the driving force, but accountability, community in this process is going to really help us stick to it.
Mm-hmm. And I think that can go into so there are the three laws of inversion of the habit loop to break that bad habit. The first one is to make the cues invisible. The second and third are to like make the habit unattractive and difficult. And that's where community really comes in. It's really important, and this is maybe one of the most difficult things, that your community supports the direction you are going, whether that is family, friends, the people you surround yourself in your career, your job, whatever. Those are the people that are either going to make it easy to continue with limiting habits or make it difficult or unattractive to follow through with those habits. If you are surrounding yourself with people who lift you up and encourage you to reframe your mindset, to be better, then it's going to be unattractive to be overspending on things that you don't truly value. And if you're spending time with people who like to do free things as much as you, it's going to make it difficult to overspend in the areas you don't want to spend on. So that's why we are so invested in having people around you who live the way you want to live.
Yeah. And the next portion of this article in talking about how to reform, redirect our habits has to do with mindset. I'll just list off the three that come next, and it's related to visualizing yourself succeeding, not needing to become someone else, but return to the old you, and some of the things that we can do to interrupt negative self-talk. And so I think each one could be implemented depending on your own personality and what makes sense to you. If you are someone who enjoys visualizing things and imagining yourself at the place that you want to be, then that might be a really helpful mindset for you in really daydreaming and envisioning this new life can help. It's not going to be the only thing. It's not some magic pill, but it does help us to imagine and keep that goal in focus. The next tip related to the not needing to be someone else, just return to the old you, that's a mindset shift of recognizing that you don't need to become a new person. Chances are that the habits you're trying to break is in some form a return to maybe who you used to be. Like they use the mm-hmm. example of smoking. Chances are you weren't born smoking. So it's not it's not that you need to quit smoking. It's more this mindset of you need to return to being a non-smoker. You probably have not spent money your whole life. So it's not like, I need to just not be this type of person, but rather go back to the more simple ways of life. This, I think, breaks down at some point, but I think that mindset can be helpful in, I think what it's primarily getting at is the narrative and the story we tell ourselves about who we are. And that can be a big barrier in us achieving and experiencing change is, well, this is who I am. I'm an overspender. I'm a smoker. I'm a couch potato, like whatever words you would want to put on it. And we take that on as an identity. And I think that this exercise is mostly pointing at how do we shed those negative self-talks that aren't beneficial to us, mostly even aren't true, that these aren't identifying identity pieces. So there's that one. And then using the word but to overcome self-talk. And I like the examples that they give, you know, maybe moving from if you feel like you're a person who's a failure, you might have this narrative in your head going, I'm a failure, I'm a failure. And maybe it's shifting it to I'm a failure, but everybody fails sometimes. Or if you feel like no one respects me, I'm not a respectable person, no one respects me. But I'm working to develop a valuable skill. So it's really shifting where we typically go, what we say about ourselves to the action that we're trying to put towards change. And again, that's all, that's mindset. That's taking our thoughts, being aware of them, how they are moving our behaviors and shifting that, because it all begins in our mind. And when we can shift the way that we think, then we can shift the way that we behave.
Yeah. And these mindsets are, you know, the I'm stupid, I'm a failure. Those are not the mindsets you want to stick with. The but is simply just something to add at the end.
Yes.
Instead of a period. Eventually, you want to be able to say, I'm not a failure. I failed at this one thing. But failing and failing better is part of success.
Yeah. Adding the buts is just the first step. Good point, Jen. You don't want to stay there.
Right. And the more you dive into creating a growth mindset and developing good habits and breaking limiting ones, the more you develop this language. It's language that you have to learn. And it's difficult to learn after years of saying, like, I'm bad with money. I need to spend money to feel better. All of these narratives that we talk to ourselves about money. It's hard to break those narratives. You have to learn language to replace the narratives you're telling yourself. And that kind of leads the last one is to plan for failure. And this is so important because we all slip up every now and then. It's what the article says. And it's not even, we see failure as like this, it's a big negative thing. But failing at something or just not, most of the times it's just not succeeding in the way that you thought you would succeed. It's not failure. So I think the idea is that if you plan for failure, it's not in a self-sabotaging way where you try something, but you don't give it your 100% because you just assume you'll fail. So we're not talking about that, but we're talking about know that you're going to make mistakes. Know that you're not going to be perfect. Know that you're not going to succeed in the way that you think you should succeed in order to define success. So when you're building a habit, there's a lie out there that says it's going to take you 21 days to build a habit. And the reality is it takes, you know, at least 66, somewhere closer to 120. So whatever you're working on, whatever habit you're working on, you'll be working on it for 3 to 6 months at least. And you're not going to be perfect, especially in the first couple weeks. And that's when most people will give up when they're trying to break a limiting habit. So plan to not be perfect. Plan to not succeed in the way you think you should.
Yes, so true. I also
love the way that this article wraps up in this where to go from here section. And I appreciate the way that they highlight that it's very easy for us to get caught up in how we feel about our bad habits, or what, you know, we might label them our bad habits. And we can feel guilty, or we will spend our time dreaming up how we wish things were, but our feelings are not necessarily what's going to actually be the factor that moves us to action. It's more so an awareness of what's happening, gathering up information that's going to actually make the change. So great intro into kind of next steps to take. So I would encourage anyone to check out this article, but they list out questions that you can be asking yourself, like, when does your bad habit actually happen? How many times a day are you engaging in this habit? Where are you? Who are you with? What triggers the behavior and causes it to start? And so even just simply tracking, very similar to how we approach our personal finances from the start of just tracking, where's my money going? How's it being spent? Who am I with? What happened just before it? All of these things are so interconnected. And if we can remove some of those feelings, emotional baggage around it, and just be curious about ourselves, our own researchers, if you will, gathering this information, it's that information that's going to fuel and inform the next steps after you've tracked all of these things. And you can look back on that with that curious eye and think, okay, then what can I do? What triggers this? How can I eliminate those triggers? What's the cue, craving, reward? What can I be doing instead just before this habit might be triggered? How can I replace it? What would be something that's effective? Where is this beginning? What does this tell me about myself? What is it that I'm trying to avoid? Are there other coping mechanisms that I'm going to feel better about? And all of these things, all of these questions will move us towards growth, where we're not going to fall into those first three habits that we talked about in that first article. We are more equipped once we go through this process to combat some of those other ways that we might tend to pull in that direction, but we can be more intentional as a result of asking ourselves this and paying attention and replacing, not just eliminating.
Yes. You know what we'll never replace
or eliminate,
and that I've missed so much?
The bill of the week.
That's right. It's time for the best minute of your entire week. Maybe a baby was born and his name is William. Maybe you paid off your mortgage. Maybe your car died and you're happy to not have to pay that bill anymore. Duck bills, buffalo bills, Bill Clinton. This is the bill of the week.
Hey, Jen and Jill, I have a very small but sweet bill of the week for you regarding eggs. I, like many Americans, have not been able to find eggs that cost less than, I don't know, $8 to $10 a dozen. So I was shopping at my local big box store, and I wasn't completely floored that there were no eggs left that weren't the very, very high natural whatever variety. And I just wanted eggs, some large eggs. I saw one carton left of eggs kind of lurking in the back behind the price tag of $1.99. Open them up. One of the eggs was cracked. And I thought, you know what? For $1.99, I'm just going to get 11 eggs. So I get to the front, start to check out. And I tell the cashier, like, ah, you know, he's very sweet. And I say, oh, this was the only one left. I can't believe I'm buying eggs that has the cracked egg in them. And he just kind of laughed. And when he ran them across the scanner, I saw they rang at $4.49. So I said, oh no, this must have also been in the wrong place. But, you know, I'm still desperate for eggs, so I'll still buy them. And he just laughed very kindly and said, you know what? He said, I'll give them to you for that. I'm going to take off more too. He changed the price of those eggs to $1.49. And it was just a really nice day. And I just went through those eggs very slowly because I was just so grateful to have a dozen eggs. And yes, I even used the crack one for $1.49. All right. Thanks, Jen and Jill. Have a great day.
Oh my gosh. Katie, your eggs for $1.49. A, what a relatable and sad experience. B, congratulations. Your kindness got you a discount. And that is fantastic. Yeah. Kindness always wins. Mm.
Sometimes it doesn't, but I love it when it does.
Well, in this community, kindness always wins. Even if it's not monetary, wins.
Oh, that's so true, Jen. You know what? I don't think I've ever heard a story of an egg negotiation, but I love this. I don't even know if you intended to be negotiating, Katie, but that's the way that I'm interpreting this story, is that you took your carton of eggs and you negotiated it down to $1.49. You negotiated with kindness. And what an amazing bill. And how interesting that something like that can really just shift the course of a day. I'm so glad that you had a great experience with this cashier, that you even used the cracked egg. I hope you didn't get sick. But well done.
Yes. Well
done. We love hearing about deals.
Yes. And it is, I mean, eggs, man, they have had their 15 minutes this year for sure.
All the people who have been raising chickens are like, see, this is why.
Your $1,000 investment has saved you money in the long run. But I have been using, so I'll make a baked oatmeal like almost every weekend, and it calls for 2 eggs. And this year I have been going down to 1 egg and 1 flax egg.
What's a flax egg?
And I could do 2 flax eggs. I just kind of like to split the difference. But it's a tablespoon of ground flaxseed, 2 tablespoons of water. You mix it up and let it sit for a few minutes. And it gets a kind of a gelatinous consistency. And it works just like an egg in baked goods. So
you've got some great tips, Jen. You should start a podcast.
Oh, thank you.
Once you're done having babies.
Thank you. Maybe I will.
Sometimes I will replace eggs with applesauce.
Yes. Vegans.
I don't know if applesauce is any cheaper than eggs, but
vegans are having their moment for sure, because they're like, no $8 eggs for us. Mm-mm.
Yeah,
no, we've been living vegans. This life. That is well done. And that's what we got out of this bill of the week. And well done, Katie.
If you all listening want to submit your bill, if you're a vegan having your 15 minutes, or you're a chicken farmer having your 15 minutes, or you are just out there slaying like Katie, negotiating your eggs at the checkout counter, we want to hear about it. Or just any other podcast or any other bill related to anything related to bills. We keep it loosey-goosey. Visit frugalfriendspodcast.com/bill. Leave us your bill. We are here for it. For many of us, there comes a time when we need to navigate some complex money situations, and it's tough to know who to trust when receiving crucial financial advice. That's where Fearless Finance comes in.
Fearless Finance is making financial advice more affordable and accessible. They're a fee-only financial planning firm that provides on-demand, comprehensive financial planning by the hour, without the high fees and long-term commitments that come with traditional financial advisors. You can quit whenever you want with no strings attached.
Their planners meet you where you are at on your financial journey. So whether you're looking to buy a house, optimize your savings, or just want to get expert eyes on your finances to ensure you're on the right track, they can answer your questions and help you achieve your goals.
Visit fearlessfinance.com today to get started. You can chat with a planner for free to make sure it's a good fit. And you'll get $50 off your first planning meeting when you use the code FRUGAL.
You might remember from our budget apps episode, we mentioned Monarch Money as being one of the best apps for people switching from Mint.
Monarch is the top-rated all-in-one personal finance app. It gives you a comprehensive view of all your accounts, investments, transactions, and more. Create custom budgets, track progress toward financial goals, and collaborate with your partner. And now get an extended 30-day free trial when you go to monarchmoney.com/frugal.
The switch from budgeting with Mint to Monarch is easy, since Monarch has a tool that allows you to easily import your data from Mint, keeping all of your tags and categories intact. It's also super customizable. After trying out Monarch for myself, I understand why it's a top-rated personal finance app.
And right now, listeners on this show will get an extended 30-day free trial when you go to monarchmoney.com/frugal. That's monarchmoney.com/frugal for your extended 30-day free trial. Go to monarchmoney.com/frugal for an extended 30-day free trial. And now it's time for the lightning round. Welcome back, Jen.
I hope you've been saving those intense sound effects for me. Maybe just like
you've
been
missing
it up.
Missing my aggression.
Yes. I am excited for this lightning round because I had an immediate answer, and I've heard Jill's answer was also immediate but has changed. But we'll see. Do you want me to go first or you? You need time to think of a new one?
Yeah, please go first.
All right. So the question is, what's a recent habit you had to replace and how did you do it? So for the first 6 weeks of my new son's life, I ate frozen waffles every morning for 6 weeks.
Love that.
It's
now, hold on. Can I pause you in your story?
Yeah.
Can I interject? Was there any shame in that? Was that an active choice that you felt good about?
It was not a choice that I made intentionally at first. Before I went to the hospital, I filled up my freezer with food and just easy food. And waffles were the first thing to go. It was my treat for making it through the night. I got through the night because I knew waffles were in the morning. That was a real thing. I literally was up several times a night, but I'm like, in the morning, I'm making waffles in the toaster oven.
Yes, like Donkey from Shrek.
Yes. So that really got me through the first few weeks and then just became a habit. It just became a habit every morning for 6 weeks. And at that time, I'm like, this is not a treat anymore. I need to redirect this. So I have replaced it with eggs because I have an endless amount of money at my disposal. And so I have been eating egg cups and breakfast burritos. So like turkey bacon and eggs inside of tortilla. That is literally my breakfast burrito. Two slices of turkey bacon, an egg, and a low-carb tortilla. That's my breakfast burrito. It's not fancy, but I love it.
Yum.
Or like an egg cup. Each like muffin tin has one egg and a chicken sausage, a morning chicken sausage. So that is what I have replaced my waffles with.
But that's work. And you might not have been able to do
that
the previous 6 weeks.
Right. And I'll meal plan them. So like on Sunday, I'll go through a dozen eggs between making my egg cups and my breakfast burrito. And I'll just bake both. So like I'll do 6 eggs, whip them up and put them in the egg cups with the chicken sausages. And then the other 6 I'll put into a glass baking dish and I'll put all those in the oven, bake them, and then they're there for the week. So it's not that much work because I still, my son's, you know, almost like just 9 weeks old. So he's still very tiny. No, I mean, he's huge. Mm-hmm. He's a chonk. But he's, you know, compared to regular sized humans, tiny.
Right.
And he still wakes
compared
up.
Compared to other babies his size, he's
right.
Leading the pack. But
yes. Oh my God. He's so big.
Well, and how interesting. I think what you're saying is bringing up such a good point. I think sometimes we can identify this has now become a bad behavior, what a behavior we want to replace, where it was a habit that was intentional to begin with. So it was almost as if, you know, when we talk about cue, craving, reward, and one of the ways to replace a habit is to give yourself some sort of reward. And what's that going to be? And it sounds like that was the response to a previous larger issue of sleepless nights.
Mm-hmm.
And how will I get through this sleepless night with a good attitude, doing the things that I need to be doing? Your reward, which made sense at the time, were waffles. And now that's kind of turned into this coping mechanism, habit, whatever you want to call it, that now you want to replace. And I think that will probably, that cycle will probably keep happening throughout.
And I replaced it with something just as delicious and just, I mean, almost just as easy to make. Because in the mornings, I literally just pop them into the microwave and they're good. And they're very quick to prep. I'll prep them when I make dinner on Sunday night. That's when I throw the eggs in the oven. So I've been doing that for a few weeks and it's been great. And it has been like an even replacement. I just made, so I was saying how I made like an oatmeal bake every weekend until I gave birth. And I've, in these 2 months, I've just made my first one again this past weekend. So that was something I really enjoyed that has been too much work up until this point. Yeah. And I probably still am not going to make them every weekend. Just this weekend was a, you know, a good, I found myself a 30 minutes of time to do something
I think
extra,
it just highlights that it might be, for some, it's a bad habit. For others, it's a fine habit. For some seasons of life, it's okay. And then other times we want to shift it. So I think it really, your story in this is highlighting just the permission there and to just focus on one thing at a time. Before, it was sleep and survival. Now, it's, okay, what's, how can I feed my body a little bit more healthy, sustainable foods?
And it's why I don't like using the term bad habit, because long term, eating waffles every morning is a bad habit. But for me, it was not a bad habit. It was just a limiting habit. And it was for intentional for a reason. And then when I decided that I didn't want that anymore, though I do still love waffles, I went through a lot of maple syrup. My checkbook could not handle the amount of maple syrup I went through. I had to switch to eggs.
Right. Same. Like mine's not a bad habit. It, you know, it serves me.
This makes me sound so like more PG, but like honestly, I could have the same. Jill and I could be telling the same story. So don't get it twisted.
Okay. Jen has encouraged me to not eliminate what I was, the only thing I could think to offer to you fine folks listening to this podcast. And she's encouraging me towards vulnerability. And here it is. I do like to be authentic and I'm not ashamed of this. And I am a work in progress. Now, I have been on a journey of what I feel is an okay amount of consumption of alcohol. I have no problems with alcohol, like as far as the way that I view it or the way that I engage with it. But there are times that I can kind of ebb and flow with, oh, I would like to be abstinent from this thing for a time. And so I would say more recently, it's been, I think I've heard from so many people through the pandemic how alcohol consumption went up a little bit, because what else are you going to do when you're sitting at home and working from home? And not that I drank while I was working, still have some standards around that. Stay tuned, though. And I think just there were times where I went months without consuming alcohol. And then I was like, I enjoy it though. It's a fun thing to do out with friends and we've got people visiting. So anyhow, all that to say, more recently, I've just been trying to limit how much I'm consuming, keeping track of what that is. I never will have more than one or two drinks like on any given day. Mm-hmm. I hate the feeling of being drunk. I just enjoy a nicely crafted cocktail or a glass of wine. But even still, I don't want to do that every day. I want my body to be able to get nutrients. And so anyhow, I've gone through seasons where a glass of wine or a cocktail almost marks the end of the day for me, and realizing that, okay, this might have become a habit, this kind of ritualized behavior. It's how I'm marking the movement of one of you know, maybe work life into personal life kind of a thing. And so I have worked on replacing that with something, realizing I can't just not do this. I'm going for something in the fridge. And so I've replaced it with either tea or something I've really been enjoying, honestly. I know this sounds so silly, but just like iced lemon water is so refreshing to me as we're getting into the summer months. So that has really worked. But also, I'm not abstinent from alcohol altogether. So there you have it. Like I'm trying to hold the radical middle even in that, even as I see all of these people moving towards abstinence on all things is the key to well-being. I think for me, there's permission for that to be different while also identifying what's going to be best for me. And can I replace some of this with enjoyable bevies? Enjoyable non-alcoholic bevies.
Yes.
There
I mean,
is.
I too enjoy an alcoholic bevy, and I've been abstinent from them for 9 months. So,
oh, yeah, being pregnant kind of forces your hand in that regard.
Yeah, it's the worst. So I could say the same thing. But no, mine was waffles. But to each their own.
We just love food and drink, folks.
We do.
What more can we say?
And that's going to be, I think, a lot of people is one of, I mean, probably you should probably work on one habit at a time. And probably the first habit is going to be something food related. And so know that we are with you on that. Sometimes you replace cheap waffles for very expensive eggs, but sometimes you replace expensive alcohol with really inexpensive lemon water. So look at your habits, pick one, and start to replace it. Know that you will not do it perfectly, just like Jill.
I'm not doing it perfectly, but I will say, though, as it relates to spending, because there is an intersection here, especially when it comes to food and alcohol. One of the shifts that Eric and I have made in the last few months is not buying alcohol out, which might not be everybody's story, but for us, that's a big expense, mm-hmm. is alcohol out. For us, we'd rather, and we used to like do bartending events and that kind of thing, so we can make really enjoyable cocktails. So we do that at home. The other choice that we made is to not have all the different types of liquor on hand and feel like we have to keep stocking our cabinet, but choosing one. So right now we've chosen, we're just going to have gin on hand. And that has helped to cut down the budget. And when the gin's gone, that's it.
When the gin's gone.
Until the next, I don't know, month or whatever. I can't tell you exactly my timing on all of that, but making ways where it can be connected to some of these financial decisions and then creating some of those limiting factors, removing some of those triggers, putting some parameters in place that is also helping our finances too, which is great.
Mm-hmm.
Hope that that was helpful, informative, encouraging, permissive, whatever you needed this episode to be. Thank you for listening. Many of you know, but we're going to say it again, we have a membership for our listeners, many of which are paying down debt or they're getting after other personal finance goals. We're here for it all. We do monthly money challenges. We offer accountability groups so you can connect with other frugal friends, have someone to help build and replace habits with together. And we want to congratulate one of our members for a big win. This comes from Vanessa B., who writes, "Big win, teaching the next generations. I was asked to teach cooking classes for our junior high students at my school. So I asked my principal if I could add a financial component to it. And she said, absolutely. They need to develop these skills. At the end of the class, I made them look through the flyers and they had to pick 10 products that their family uses and that they considered on sale. They kept asking, but how are we going to know? And I'd answer, well, that's the thing. The first time you do it, you don't know. But I'm hoping that by June, you are masters at recognizing what's a good price. They're keeping a logbook. Anyway, I feel so full after that class. I loved sharing those tricks with them and I can see that they see the value in them. I even told them if your parents / you save money on groceries, that means more money for things you like, values-based budgeting, celebration emoji. I even got to bring back some food that would have gone to waste at home afterwards. Apparently no one likes mushrooms.
Oh my
crazy,
gosh.
Crazy eye emoji.
Vanessa,
I love so much of this.
This is so Great. I love it whenever I can talk to a young person about spending money, because we're expected to just get into college and move out and know how to spend money, know how to get a legitimately good deal. But so often we're not taught. We're just taught, look for the sale or not even. So this is such great, great information, way more important than the Pythagorean theorem. I'm sorry for everyone that uses the Pythagorean theorem on a day-to-day basis. But this is better to me.
Yeah. Well done, Vanessa. And thanks again for listening, everyone. If you want to check out that membership where Vanessa is and other amazing Frugal Friends, where we also have all kinds of courses, interviews, challenges to make it fun, and so much more, head to frugalfriendspodcast.com/club. You can just kind of see what we got, see if it's a good fit.
Yeah. See you next time.
Frugal Friends is produced by Eric Sirianni.
Jen, we did it. Welcome back.
Oh,
how'd that feel?
I felt a little rusty.
Oh, you didn't seem it to me.
But I feel like I'm back. Like, it's good to be back. I feel like I'm talking to our frugal friends and not just to an infant who, like, can't reciprocate. Like, yes. I view when I'm talking on the podcast, I view this, like, inanimate woman driving her car, like,
yes,
hearing knowledge bombs and, like, having her life changed. And that might be a little arrogant of me.
I came back with an ego.
But that is much more, but I cannot see the person listening. So I'm allowed to think that. And when I see my son sitting on my lap and I'm talking to him and he's just like nothing, and I'm like, oh man,
teach him everything. He might retain it. Possibly. Picture a woman definitely in the car. That's for sure. And mm-hmm. and when I'm not picturing that, it's a woman running or walking with earbuds in, occasionally needing to stop and tie her shoes. I never realized it until right now as I'm putting into words. Like, I picture some woman running and stopping to tie her shoes.
Wow.
While she listens so to us. Specific. I know, that's weird. It's very weird. So the woman tying her shoes, we're here for you today. This message is for you.
Yes.
You're great.
If you're just feeling, I think also more so than knowledge bombs, feeling a sigh of relief and permission is like, mm-hmm. she's holding the wheel and she's like, okay, like feeling permission.
Mm.
So maybe that's what I mean by knowledge bombs.
Meanwhile, all of our actual listeners are like listening to us on the toilet. Like, we're not driving or running.
Oh my gosh.
We're going to the bathroom.
Please follow us on Instagram at Frugal Friends Podcast and let us know where you're listening from. Yes. Please.
Please
let us know what you're feeling. And maybe I'll picture you. Or maybe if you don't want me to picture you, don't comment. But I'll keep the face ambiguous.
Diamonds Direct Spring Sale starts this weekend. Get 20% off rings, earrings, pendants, bracelets, and more. It's the best store-wide sale of the season. Plus, book an appointment and get an additional $100 off. That's 20% off plus $100 off store-wide. And enjoy an expanded selection of the latest styles with designer appearances each weekend. Tons of engagement rings on sale, too. 20% off starts Friday and opens Sundays. Details at DiamondsDirect.com.
Asking the right questions can greatly impact your future, especially when it comes to your finances. So if you're looking for a financial advisor you can trust, certified financial planner professionals are committed to acting in your best interest. That's why it's got to be a CFP. Find your CFP professional at letsmakeaplan.org.